The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to William Hill's Racing Podcast. We're going to look ahead to Sunday's racing on this edition, and you'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:40 p.m. with Mick Norton, James Millman and Richie McGrath in the studio, if I can speak. And we have three meetings to look forward to: Fontwell and Toaster domestically, and Irish Racing from Nace as well. And joining me in the studio to look at the action is Andy Holding. How are you, Andy?
Very well, Mark. Yes, very good. Nice to speak to you actually face-to-face rather than on the telephone.
Yeah, makes a nice change.
It does, yeah.
Well, maybe not from your side of the table.
But no. It's always good to get up close and personal.
obviously,
too close.
thank God for this table in the way.
Yeah.
We've got an ace to look forward to on Sunday. Yep. We'll obviously be speaking to you on Sunday morning, so we won't let the cat out of the bag just yet, shall we say.
No, it kind of spoils it a bit, doesn't it, to analyse it a day in advance. And too many little sneaky thieves out there, and they're hoovering up the overnight prices, so we'll wait till the morning.
Yeah, so we're going to look at some domestic action on this. Fontwell and Toaster are the two meetings. Two good meetings as well. There's the Grade 2 National Spirit Hurdle at Fontwell, so we'll move on to that shortly. But before we get to Sunday's racing, Andy, with this being probably the last time we'll speak to you on a racing podcast without doing the Irish stuff, obviously,
yep,
as a daily racing podcast front before Cheltenham, I suppose we should talk about that. Is there anything, would you say you have a festival banker or anything that's really screaming out to you at the moment?
Obviously, providing he runs, I think Red Sherlock is one of my main points of interest. I've had a little bit of a word on the grapevine there that things aren't quite going according to plan with him.
Right.
And that's just totally off the record almost. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But he's by far and away the best English horse I've got on the figure so far this season. And whatever beats him, I think we'll win the Neptune. I'm quite interested in some of the handicaps. Actually, funny enough, I stayed up overnight and killing 2-3 hours before I nodded off. I went through quite a few of the handicaps. It's difficult to make an honest assessment until you've seen the weights and what the Irish horses are going to get with regards to their marks. But there are a couple of races I've got my eye on in particular. The race that Rutherglen's entered in, the Fred Winter Juvenile. I have invested interest in that division throughout the course of the season. It'd be churlish of me not to mention a couple that I think could be quite well handicapped. and it'd be interesting to see, actually, as we speak, how the race at Fairy House this afternoon pans out. Of course, got quite a few entries in the Fred Winter. The favourite to win is a William Mullins trained horse today, who's an odds-on chance that the mare down the bottom, the name escapes me for the time being, but they've got Abyss Heel. They've also got another horse called All Pepper. So William Mullins has got two horses against the short price favourite in the first at Fairy House today.
Adriana Demott.
Adriana Demart, that was the one. Nice one. And there's quite a few others in there, like Halling's Treasure, that could make the gig in the Fred Winter. Two horses that I think are interesting from an anti-post perspective are Seabeat, trained by Arthur Moore. Arthur Moore, of course, has won this race before with a horse called What a Charm. Mm-hmm. And for the same connections as well. And Seabeat had the statutory three runs, concluding with a victory at Nice over Levant Danton in a very fast time. And the third horse in that race, Powder Hound, is also one I'll have my beady eye on, having gone through that race really strongly, only to make a bad mistake at the last. I think he might have won Powder Hound had he jumped the last cleanly. Mm. And Powder Hound has been a horse I've had sort of high up on my shortlist as an animal that would definitely make the grade as a juvenile. He hasn't really disappointed, although he hasn't won, if that makes sense. He was second to Abyss Heel first time out at Fairy House. Fought a quick big Vic against the older horses at Leopardstown. And then that good run last time out at Nace, which should get him our arc in the low 120s. But he's a good horse off the level with Andrew Baldwin. And I think better ground will suit him as well. So if you gave me a couple of bets in the Fred Winter, Not knowing the weights, I'd probably dive into those two, Powder Hound and Seabeat.
Okay, they're both 20-1 at the moment, so a bit of value there if somebody wants to side with them. We must mention Rutherglen's price as well, 16-1 in that race. Is that the aim?
Well, you'd only be 16-1 with the run. We haven't made any firm decisions yet. At the moment, we're sort of leaning towards the Triumph because handicappers dealt us a bit of a body blow by raising us £7 for just sitting in a box, courtesy of collateral form involving our horse. Thorpe was the horse that did it because he went and finished third in that Grade 2 race behind Broughton at Musselburgh, and we beat him easily at Musselburgh the time before, giving him the best part of a stone and a half. So the handicappers looked at his sums and thinking, hang on a minute, if I'm moving Thorpe up, I've got to move up Rutherglen sort of retrospectively. So it's just really annoying, really, because I've won 280, he'd be massively competitive, and we think he'd go very close. But now he's almost looking off 135 to be near enough top weight, which is not ideal.
No.
So in such a wide open year, we are thinking of maybe going down the Triumph Hurdle route. But, you know, John Quinn's got two others in that race as well, Aurora d'Estravan, he's got Pearl Castle. Both sets of owners both want to go to the Triumph as well.
Right.
So do we. It's not ideal for John. I'm sure he'd want to probably run one in the Fred Winter, and we would have been the one.
Yeah.
But the other two
just
have got
a bit of a kick in the.
Well, it is, because Aurora d'Estravan's got 137, which has probably rolled her out of it.
Yeah.
And of course, Pearl Castle, having won the other day, he's going to get, you know, the best pot. Well, he's going to go up, isn't he, from whatever he was rated. I don't know what he would have been provisionally rated before Doncaster, but you're looking at probably 130, nearly 140 for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that John Quinn all of a sudden has got all three heavy's top class juveniles all in the Triumph Hurdle, which is not great. But anyway, we'll go with the fighting chance with Rutherglen, and the track will suit him, and I'm sure he'll do as proud whichever race we end up deciding.
Yeah. This will be the first horse you've had a part in the Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exciting.
It is exciting, yeah. I've been carried along the Rutherglen crest of a wave through the whole season, really, and there's not a day go by when I don't think about what might happen at Cheltenham, and playing the race over in my head, and looking at all the other horses in the race that have had runs this season, and I've eaten, breathed and slept the juvenile kind of division this season. So I'd like to think I know everything about them, and he certainly won't be disgraced. I'd be disappointed, actually, if the race was run tomorrow and there was a maximum field of 20, that he wasn't in the first dozen, half dozen. You know, I'd be expecting him to finish in the first six.
Yeah.
And he's tough as well, isn't he? You know, we all know how hardy he is, and he certainly won't shirk the issue. But, you know, Triumph Hurdle's looking running, and there's lots of good horses in there, so we don't want to get too carried away.
Yeah.
But it's exciting, yeah.
Get carried away during the race. And
I don't know what it'll be like on the day. I mean, I can only imagine what it will feel like, but I'll be nervous, there's no doubt about it, and just hope he comes home safe. That's the main thing.
Yes. Let's talk about a few of the other races then. We'll talk about some of the big four races, shall we? The Champion Hurdle's warming up to be a real cracker. We've got the World Hurdle, which has a few question marks around some of them, but again, equally as intriguing. I've spoken about those two races quite a lot on the podcast because there's many differing opinions, but the other two I haven't really mentioned. I mean, the Champion Chasers, the Queen Mother Champion Chasers, the question mark about Sprinter Sacra, of course. And the Gold Cup was I think it's because those other races are so intriguing this year, but not really too much chat about the Gold Cup on the podcast this year from myself. And it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on some of those races.
Well, the great thing about all four championship races this season, all the marquee events, is that they are so wide open.
Mm.
Normally we have a short price value. Big books has been, you know, 4 to 5, 4 to 6 most years, and you know, the Champion Chasers usually had one or two horses that can win, and the Gold Cup, you know, equally. I think all, and I mean, the Champion Hurdle, as we've said on many occasions, is probably the best Champion Hurdle of our age.
Yeah,
I can't ever recall this. I've been going to Cheltenham for 25, 30 years now, and I cannot remember a host of top class horses as good as this lot, all running in the one season with an all unblemished record, all having some kind of chance.
Mm.
And at the moment, I'm quite open minded about it. Yeah, I've backed Jet Ski. I'm certainly not expecting anything other than a top 3-4 finish at best. I don't think, honestly, hand on heart, he can win.
Mm.
But he'll certainly run a lot better than he has done the last two runs, because there's been mitigating circumstances. And obviously Hurricane Fly's set a massive standard for all to beat this year, and he's definitely the one to beat. But he's got My Ten to Yours, who's one of the most exciting horses that Nicky Henderson's ever had. Ah, Connor, huge win of the Triumph, and has done nothing wrong with these two runs, has been primed to the minute by Desi Hughes. And the new one, other than that mistake at Kempton, which cost him the Christmas hurdlers, done nothing wrong either this season. You're throwing the likes of the possibility of Annie Power running. If it was heavy ground, Melodic Rendezvous having a chance.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
it's absolutely
like every angle you could pursue, you could see three or four eventualities.
Mm-hmm.
A lot will depend on the day, and I probably won't have a bet until the day. If I'm going to have another bet, it'll probably be ground related. Like if it's heavy ground, that'll probably stop me back in My Tent or Yours, and I'll probably side with maybe Arcona each way. But if it dried out and it was quick ground or good to soft, I think My Tent or Yours would be difficult to get out of the frame because of his cruising speed, the way he travels through his race. It's hard to see him not still cantering, going down to two out and turning for home.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, if he was like 4-1 or above, quarter of the odds, you're almost having a free bet with My Tent or Yours.
Yeah.
And he's the kind of horse I like backing. I backed the last two Champion Hurdle winners basically because I've looked for the horse who is most likely to run his race and going to give me my money back.
Mm.
I backed Hurricane Flight 3-1 a quarter of the odds last year with the dead eight runners because I thought he couldn't be out of the frame. And I did exactly the same the year before with Rock on Ruby.
Yeah.
When he got a brilliant profile of being never out of the frame at Cheltenham, never out of the frame in his life, and everything going into that Champion Hurdle that year suggested he was going to be in the first three. So sometimes you bet according to the conditions on the day and what you think is the best price sometimes, rather than, oh yeah, I think that'll win.
Mm.
I just bet the horse I think has got the best chance of not losing me money.
Yeah, yeah. It's
a bit of a cop-out bet.
Which is going to give you the best chance of a bet.
I think it will, yeah.
Yeah.
And if he wins, great. But if he doesn't, I'm thinking, well, I've backed My Tent to Yours each way. I've had 150 quid each way or whatever it is, and I've got my money back.
Yeah.
So it'll be a fence-sitting bet, but to give me an interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and My Tent or Yours fits that bill this year, 4-1, quarter of the odds, 1-3 at the moment. Obviously, ground dependent and everything else, like you said.
Yeah.
But, okay, the Queen Mother, Champion Chase, Sprinter Sakura, if he gets there in one piece, is still going to be very hard to beat. He's 4-7 with a run.
Yeah, again, another race, Mark, to be honest, I haven't really decided what angle to approach this at, and I'm sure most punters out there are equally perplexed. I think there's lots of things that are going to happen between now and the build-up of this race, which could totally change the dynamic. Hopefully we'll see Sprinter Sakura there, but even if he's there, I think he's a horse that bookmakers will want to take on off the back of a pulled-up run on his only start. Don't think he hasn't had a run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he might have an race course gallop or something like that, and he's obviously been prepared at home, but it's not like he's going there in A1 condition like he was last year, and we could just bet him at 3-on and take the money.
Yeah.
I think bookmakers will be looking to puff their chests out and try and lay him. I think he'll be the big knockout horse on the day. You know, if it's like 4-5 anti-post, he'll be like 5-4 even money on the day. They'll want to try and get him in the odd, particularly if you've got the likes of Arvika Legionnaire, Beneficent, maybe Hinterland if he bypasses the Arkle.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? And then you've got good horses like Sir de Grugy, Wishful Thinking, who's come back to form. It's not a foregone conclusion that he's only got to go down and come back. And if Barry Geraghty senses any kind of weakness or flinching him, he'll pull him up.
He'll be
told to go out there, whatever you do. If you feel anything go wrong, straight away, pull him up.
Well, he did that the other week, didn't he? The kind of jockey and most jockeys and horsemen, they understand straight away, don't they, when something's not right, and they wouldn't risk it, would just pull him straight up. And
well, he could be the bet of all time at 5-4.
Yeah.
If, let's say he's 5-4 in the day and there's 7 or 8 runners, people will be falling around themselves thinking, I can't believe it. He should be. If he hadn't had that pull up, he's 4-on, and all of a sudden he's even money because of the doubt.
Yeah.
And it's up to you as a punter which way you go.
Well, that relates to me in the World Herd a little bit, because I think 7-4 about big bucks is just ridiculous.
Mm.
I think that the reappearance in the Cleve was absolutely spot on to set him up for March. And if he'd have won that race, you wouldn't have got anywhere near even money about him.
No.
The fact that he's come out and he's been competitive in a race rather than just breezing round, and it'll just absolutely teed him up for the World Hurdle.
Yeah.
And if somebody said to me 2 years ago, you're going to get 7-4 about big bucks in a World Hurdle, if he's anywhere near his old ability, I think that's a ridiculous price. The only fly in the ointment is Annie Power, because she could be anything, but I think it's big bucks race to lose still.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how, you know, various professionals and punters go about looking at a race like this. And when I get a horse like Big Bucks, I instinctively at the price, I'm always looking to think, there's got to be an angle in here. If there's a kind of slight vulnerability, and obviously now because he's beat, I know it was heavy ground, it was his first run back, but you know he still has got beat and he is 11.
Yeah,
it's still asking a lot. And they've got a lot of young, fresh horses on the block coming through here. I don't think it's going to be as easy as it first seems. And you've got more than that, who's 3-for-3 this season, is on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're chucking the likes of Annie Power if she runs. You've got Abfisher's Cross, who obviously came back with a decent run last time out.
Yeah, better last time. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of dangerous floaters in this. None more so than Rule the World, who beat Dungwib very easy last time out in his trial. And he's trained by a master trainer here at Cheltenham, Maz Morris, who year after year always gets one or two up for this race. And one of my big bets of the festival, funny enough, will be in this race if it does run and the ground's soft.
Okay.
I've got my eye on a horse, Marla Beach, who I've been waiting for the day when he runs in a very strongly run Grade 1 race, because I think he's a real tool when he's got conditions in his favour. And he proved that last time out when he slaughtered a very good field in the Galmoy Hurdle, which has always been a good trial for the World Hurdle. He beat his stable companion Unbow Matan very easily. Jetson, who was third, has won since. He won the Per Temps qualifier afterwards. Zaid Paul was absolutely buried in that race. He just couldn't go to pace. They went a Herculean pace on the last circuit. And he came out and run really well the next time against Dungweave. So the form of that race has worked out really well. The time of the race was spectacular.
Okay.
The sectional times were spectacular. And Marla Beach certainly won't be out of place if the ground's soft. He's a very, very good horse and he's been underestimated.
Yeah, it's 33 to 1.
Yeah. But he will be one of my biggest bets of the festival at that price if the ground is soft and Gordon Elliott lets him run.
Mm.
But he'll only run it if it's soft.
Yeah.
If it dries out, you won't see him at Cheltenham. So he's not an anti-post bet, really.
You've got to wait for the ground.
If firms have gone non-runner, I bet you can't lose.
Yeah.
Because if it's soft, he'll run and he won't be 33 to 1. So you get your money back if he doesn't.
Yeah.
So and because it's one of those races where a lot of firms are betting non runner no bet because it's the championship race. What's not to like about backing Marla Beach each way?
Yeah, nice. It's a good angle. It's a very interesting.
It's a great angle. Yeah. All these races have got more angles in the more you look at them.
Okay, and we'll quickly touch on the Gold Cup then before I move on to Sunday's racing. Bobsworth, the 7-4 favourite at the moment. Salviniaco Conti 3-1. Last instalment 7-1. Q Card 8s and 16-1 barring those. How do you see the Gold Cup this year?
Well, I think without a shadow of a doubt, it would have been fought out between Bobsworth and Salviniaco Conti had he stayed on his feet. He was still going well when he fell 3 out.
Yeah,
his cards hadn't been played, and he's proven this year that you know he's the real deal. Having won a King George, outstaying Q Card, who went into the race in top form, having won the Betfair. The collateral form between all those three tells you that those are the three, on their day, best 3-mile horses. But at Cheltenham, we know that Bobsworth is unbeaten. He's unbeaten at the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Salviniaco Conti hasn't got the record that Bobsworth got, but you know that had he stayed on his feet last year, he probably would have been in the mix. So it's definitely, the market's right with these two. I haven't got an issue with how these two are priced up.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the two, you know, I'd probably give Salviniaco Conti the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, if it is soft ground, he's going to be very dangerous because of his stamina.
Yeah.
But that said, again, it's another race where I've looked at one at a big price. And there is one. He's a bit of an enigma, but he proved last time out that given his conditions on the day and given his love affair for Cheltenham, he's a match for anyone. And that's the old Giant Bolster. He was fourth in the race last year.
Yeah.
Third in the race the year before. We know he's a big race horse on the day, come the day he's there.
Yeah.
And if you look at the form of that run last time out when he won what seemed a substandard race, Harry Topper was beaten 8 lengths, he's won since.
Yeah.
Restless Harry was way back in fifth, he's won since. And Ubalo's Debo ran in that race behind Restless Harry, was a staying on fourth. So the three horses that have run out that race so far, of all, suggested that form actually wasn't as bad as it seemed at first light. And given that the hood and the visor that were combined that day were on, and they're going to be on again in the Gold Cup, it wouldn't surprise me if he get once again the Giant Bolster outran his odds of 25 to 1.
Yeah, just keeps plugging on up the hill, doesn't he?
He's a big price, and he's I almost say he's sure to go well. Mm. He's proven that 2 years running.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Gold Cup. He loves the Gold Cup. He loves Cheltenham.
Can't argue with that.
And
yeah.
He's no mug.
No, no. 20-1.
20-25-1.
Yeah, it's another one of them where you can just have a bit each way, and if he hits the frame like he's expected to, no harm done.
Other than Bobsworth winning last year, you look at the results in the Gold Cup. They've been hard to find, you know. There's been 100-1 shots, 25-1 shots. You know, you can name. Look at the roll of honour. It's a race where there's prone for a turn up every now and again.
Mm. Okay, we must move on. That's Andy's thoughts on the Cheltenham Festival. Then just over 2 weeks to go.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, well, yeah. Andy's thoughts on a few of the races. Yeah. Yeah,
we haven't even talked about all the handicaps.
No, we unfortunately run out of time.
Oh well, for another day.
Yeah, let's move on to Sunday's racing. We might get a bonus out of you on one of your other podcasts or something like that.
Well, I'm actually doing a talk every day at Cheltenham, so
yeah,
live from the track. So I'll be giving my sort of views daily.
Yeah.
When I'm there.
There you go. Well, before racing, phoning up like
When they have that slot, Noel Hannity.
Yeah.
Introduces the show, and I'll come on. Oh. 10 minutes, quarter an hour before start racing and go through the card.
Good. Well, that's something else to look forward to then. It's as if Cheltenham wasn't exciting enough
exactly,
already.
Yeah.
Let's look at Sunday's racing then.
Yep.
The 3 o'clock at Toaster is where we'll start. And this is a Class 4 handicap chase over 2 miles and 3 furlongs. And Freckleface arrives here in winning form, Andy, down at the bottom of the weights there. And probably going to be one of the ones to beat here.
Yeah, that's the one I'm going to go for. Bill Turner's got a tune out of this horse. He's a big, strong 7-year-old as well. Certainly wasn't winning out of turn when he won last time out. He was going well the time before when he unseated, and then he won by 19 lengths here last time out.
Yeah.
I just like Towster form. It's clear that this track on heavy ground plays into his strengths because he's such a big, strong horse. He's able to cope with it and go through it better than others, and I still think he's ahead of his rating currently of 110. I didn't think much of this race, funny enough. I thought Mentalist was well beaten the other day before he unseated. Polar Brook could be dangerous if he brings his A game to the table, but that isn't always the case with him. But if in doubt, like most horse races, I'll always look for C and D form. And at Towster, more than anywhere else, that's the first thing you look at. And he's the only course winner in the field. So I'm going to go with Freckleface.
Okay. It'd be interesting what you make of the 3.35 then, the 4.40, because this is a novice handicap chase over 2 miles and 6 furlongs, and the one with course form, the only one in the lineup with a win at the course, is Smart Exit, but he's taken on Take the Mick, who absolutely bolted up last time.
Yeah, I'm going to go against my theory here. Go with Take the Mick. Like you just said, this horse absolutely bolted up with a capital B. I mean, He made all the running. He went a good gallop throughout. My times of that race suggested it was a good one. And then the latter stage of the race, he just went into overdrive. He half looked as though he might be coming to the end of his tether coming out the back straight. You think, well, will he last out? Because he'd never been to beyond 3 miles before. He'd only been running over 2.5. But it seemed to even galvanise him even more. And his work from 4 out, the first in the home straight to the winning line, was something to behold. And, you know, he was going 2 to everyone's 1 in the home straight. And he was... full of running, and that suggested to me the horse right on top of his game. He's really healthy, rock hard fit, and he's going to go from the front again here today. And if he jumps a clear round, he's going to be difficult to beat on a track where front runners have a good record. 2 miles 6 heavy ground, serving it up from the front on a Venetia Williams horse right at the peak of his powers. You know, it's going to be difficult for the other horse in the race to get by him.
Okay, so Take the Mick in the 4.40 and over at Fontwell. We have a good card there as well, and we'll start in the 3.45. There is a big race on that card as well, which we'll move on to in just a moment, but the 3.45 is going to be one of Andy's selections races, and this is a novice's hurdle over 2 miles and 6 furlongs.
Yeah.
Who'd you like for this one?
I like Closing Ceremony. I wish Emma Lavelle's horses were running slightly better, although she did have a winner the other day in the shape of Moss Bank, who won the old Sydney Banks race. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of a crumb of comfort, but I do like this Closing Ceremony. I actually backed against him last time out at Kempton. I backed Manila Online, Rebecca Curtis's charge, who I thought had a good chance of turning him over. But it wasn't a big Closing Ceremony. He just buried him, to be honest. Harry's Farewell, he got beat 21 lengths, subsequently won a handicap back at the same track.
Yeah.
So I think that form is really good. But I just like this horse. He's an out-and-out galloper. Every time he's run on soft or heavy ground. Second to Cocky de Le Pre, third to Potter's Cross. So the softer the better, the more stiffer than demanding the conditions. And Fontwell is going to be bottomless, isn't it? They've had the last three meetings called off due to standing water and deep ground. And it does take some getting around here. I know it's only a small track in size, but they have a stiff uphill climb to the line in the home straight. And, you know, you're going to need a horse who's got bottomless pits of stamina, and he has.
Okay. Closing ceremony then, Andy's final selection for Sunday. That's in the 3:45. The big race on their card is the 3:10. It's the National Spirit Hurdle, which is a Grade 2 over 2.5 miles. It's kind of hard to find an angle into the race, but I wanted to talk about it because Safir Darou's in the lineup off the back of his hat trick. He's coming to his own on heavy ground of late, and he's probably going to be hard to beat again, isn't he? He's open to any amount of improvement, it seems.
He is, yeah. You know, good performance last time out to beat Whisper, who obviously loves Foss Lass. And the time before when he won in Kempton, he was equally impressive in a handicap. Temptation maybe might have been to go down the World Hurdle route on improving type, but they've got big books, and of course they've got Celestial Halo in that division, so why run three? And this looks easy pickings, doesn't it, for him? Soft, heavy grounds, absolutely fine. Barring Crispy Green, has been running really consistently well in all the top knocking handicaps this season. 7th in the Betfair, 4th in the Ladbroke. A lot of these are generally out of form. Mr. Icart obviously pulled up this season. He was runner-up in this race last year, I think, to Prospect Wells. Caith Moss has got a mountain to climb, being £35 wrong with the favourite, albeit he's in good form. And the other two look as though they're just running for a bit of prize money on a Sunday. So it's very much for his to lose. I think he'll probably be 4-7, 4-6 without seeing a forecast.
Something like that, yeah.
And, you know, barring accidents, he should keep his unbeaten run intact.
Okay, Safir Darou then. So a pretty good Sunday to look forward to.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll speak to you again ahead of Sunday's action.
Fed up with me by then.
3 Grade 2s on the card at Nice. So a good card to look forward to there. So thank you very much, Andy. And we'll speak to you again on Sunday.
Will do. Cheers, Mark.
So there you go. The thoughts of Andy Holding on Sunday's domestic action. You'll hear it all on Racing Radio from 1:40 p.m. with Mick Norton, James Millman and Richie McGrath in the studio. Fontwell and Toaster on these shows. We also have Irish Racing from Nice. We'll speak to Andy again ahead of that as well. So thank you very much for listening to the William Hill Racing Podcast, and enjoy Sunday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.